Can you hear that Rocky Mountain water as it thunders coming down to wash you away? You can't hold back the rising tide, and you can't stop the chain that's rolling down the track. You can't stop the chain that's rolling down the track.
Welcome to Southpaws, episode 379. What the hell's a Haven Con?
Yay! We survived.
It's been a couple of weeks, and we're finally getting our shit together, because Saverin has been driving all over the world.
Yup. But we're not going to talk about that on this episode. We'll be talking about on the next one. We have a recording for you guys, an interview. We sat down with Cody Melcher. Shiva ran point on that.
Cody,
by the way,
is a stand-up comedian. He was at TFF for his first full FurryCon this past February. And he has been now at HavenCon in various capacities for two consecutive years. So,
yeah, he was the MC this year, and he was vending last year.
He was also like a guest last year.
Yeah.
Was he a guest? Oh, yeah, he was a guest.
Yeah, he was doing his podcast and doing stand-up, I think.
That's right, yeah.
And this year he MC'd. So, Cody's a cool dude, and so... He came to Fiesta. He'd been to HavenCon, which we'll get into. And he came to Fiesta to get his first real taste of what a full-fledged furry con is. Because Haven's got bits of it. But this is all furry all the time. And by the time he left, he had a fursona that is a raccoon.
Nice.
So, we've got an interview with him to his take on the fandom from an outsider looking in. And then we also have our HavenCon con report, because all three of us went.
This is like the first time in a very long time that we've all been at the same convention, though we all ended up doing pretty disparate things.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, you, Saverin was helping me at the table. I was down there dealing, and Zia flew out. So Ed Buck came down Friday night. So it was actually way too many of us, because we had like a tiny little space.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, we sold some furry stuff to the furries that happened to be there.
And some to normies, you know, non-furries.
Normies!
You know, there was... We worked really well with what we had, I think. We had to be a bit selective with what we could put out, because we only had, like, what, maybe 10 feet, 12 feet of actual facing to work with?
Yeah, yeah, it was a... We have a 10 by 10 booth, but it was a 6-foot table, and then we had a folding table that we set.
And we piled it high with books.
Yeah, it was pretty stuffed, and there was a lot of stuff we couldn't display, but, you know, so we had to kind of move things around a little bit. But
Zia and I having, like, prioritization discussions, like, no, we need to put this one up front. No, this one. No,
yeah,
this one.
Yeah, and, like... I was like, you guys do that. That's all good. There was only a couple of things that I was like, okay, that one's new. That needs to be kind of close to the front. And
more prominent.
Yeah, and like, Zia kind of knows what he wants to sell and what I'll sell. So, like, normally, like, he had tiered and run point on the organization of the table. That was about all I did. We had a really nice night out. I went out with Shiva and Sarah one night. Was that Saturday
that was
night? Nice. Yeah. We went to a local hookah bar in Austin, or hookah cafe in Austin. And then we got burgers at the... What was the name of that place, Shiva?
P. Terry's. It's a local Austin franchise.
Yeah, we don't have them up here. So that was pretty good. So that was nice to, like, get out a little bit, you know, and basically do exactly what we do up here. He'll go for hookah and have burgers.
Get out of the hotel, do something different.
Yeah.
We did have a lot of fun, though, at the periphery of the convention. Because honestly, like, I don't think I really did anything at the convention that much. I played in the video game room some, and I was in the vendor hall most of the time. You and I and Sarah, we got to go do some food stuff, too.
Mm-hmm.
I only got to go out with y'all to the, what, Noble Sandwich? Noble House Sandwich Co. No,
it was a Noble Sandwich Company.
Yeah, and that's it was featured on Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives with Guy Fieri.
Mm-hmm.
And man, that place was good and worth it.
It's like, delicious.
If you want to go, like, we all ended up getting the sandwiches that were featured on the show. I got the Noble Pig. You got, what, the duck one? Or was that Sarah?
Yeah, it was a duck pastrami one done up like it was a Reuben. And Sarah got the knuckle sandwich, which was roast beef. Like a really good roast beef sandwich.
Ooh. And I paid the like $1.50 to get the bacon bread, which is like sourdough with bacon baked into it. So if you guys want to get an idea of the food, definitely look up that episode of Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives.
Because it is accurate.
It is so good, y'all. And like Shiva and we all like were Instagram, not Instagram, but like Twittering our photos, totally mm-hmm. doing the like taking a picture of our food. And they have a liquor license, so they had, you know, local brews on mm-hmm. available too. So I was like, ah, this is great. This is the kind of food stuff we want to have in Austin.
There was another brewery that Sarah was talking about that he said it's like, it's really big here, but it's like, it's not up here at all. I can't remember.
There was a couple ones that we were looking at, but one you had to get reservations for, and the other one was backed up. I'll talk my adventures when I get to my turn. But yeah, that was definitely a really, really good place to grab. That was what, Friday dinner? Yeah.
Yeah. And then, like, other than that, the most exciting thing is I helped Zia catch his Lugia in Pokemon Go.
Yeah, there was a Pokestop across the street at the Papado's. And you guys, like, would just, like, walk out there in front of Papado's, right?
Yep. And it was actually kind of cool. We were sharing the hotel space. There was, like, a track meet or something. So there was a bunch of collegiate athletes there. Mm-hmm. And Zia was out there, and then a number of other folks popped up, and Zia was like, oh, crap, get out here quick. So I run outside. And it's Zia and I, maybe like one or two other attendees and like a handful of the college athletes all out there playing. Standing under the tree or standing in the median to do the raid battle.
That's funny.
So it was nice. That, I mean, that was fun. It was good to see Zia.
Pokemon Go bringing disparate groups together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it really does.
I did a little bit of that today on April 12th, 2018 and ran into some folks, but that's for the next episode. So how was your HavenCon, Shiva?
I did, honestly, I used HavenCon more as a home base. I mean, I did do some stuff at the con. A lot of it involves schmoozing in the dealer's hall because, well, I'm always looking for new talents to say, have you heard of Furry Fiesta? And then I went to the drag show, which you have to understand, the drag show at HavenCon is more like cosplay drag. So there was a lot of different people dressed up. Like, there was a really good Jubilee and
ooh, nice.
Just a whole bunch of different acts. I was kind of thrilled at the end of Drag King 1. Really good one, too. So I went to the drag show. I sucked my nose into a couple panels, hung out at the bar for a bit and just chatted with random attendees. And then bopped in and out a lot out of the hotel all weekend long. Me and Saverin and Sarah went out to Noble Sandwich on Friday. Saturday, we ended up going out midday. We went out for breakfast tacos at another place that we'd seen online as
and
like a
review. Those are some wild-looking tacos.
They were really good.
It brisket was like, tacos, this massive long strip. Oh.
Yeah, it was like this. There was Bon Appetit has a YouTube channel, and they're really good. And one guy did like 26 tacos in 12 hours. Little thing. So it bopped here, bopped there. So we noticed where
how
a couple
of did he not
them,
die?
I ate a couple bites of each, I'm going to guess. So we bopped out to this Tex-Mex barbecue that also does breakfast tacos. And one of them was basically like a ye olde breakfast taco, but they put some of their like brisket on top of it. And it was really good. Then we went out and we hit up, there was a brewery nearby called Jester King, where we went out there mid-afternoon and discovered it was an absolute fucking madhouse because it was a gorgeous day. Like, blue skies, really nice temperature, and everybody came out of the woodwork to go that day. So we were there for a little bit, ended up bringing some back. Then bopped around HavenCon some more and eventually ended up heading out with Fuzz to just get out of there, go have some tea, smoke some hookah, and, you know, some wine down outside of away from as many people.
That was a good night.
Yeah, it was. They made really good tea, too.
Yeah, I was going to say, I really liked the tea.
And then on Sunday, we couldn't get very late checkout, so we got up and we were planning on like drifting out right at checkout time, but we realized, you know, fuck it, let's just get going. And we ended up driving down south of Austin to a Lady Bird Johnson wildflower sanctuary. So oh, cool. Lady Bird Johnson is President Johnson's wife, and she is so well known for some of her humanitarian projects, including beautifying the state. So if you ever drive in Texas at this time of year, which is early April, late March, the sides of the highway literally turn blue because of Texas bluebonnets. And there's also a whole bunch of other wildflowers. And this was actually a state initiative where they actually go and seed everything. And the sides of our roads are beautiful.
And she set this up in the 60s, and it's like still going on today. So that's really cool.
So she has a whole like a botanical garden dedicated to her. That she also helped set up, and it's down south of Austin, so you can get really good lookups of all these different Texas genus. And one thing that they're starting up, I was kind of impressed by, is a new section that they have this giant pathway of an oval, and planted on the inside of the ring, on the outside of the ring, are they collected acorns from all of these famous oak trees all over Texas, and then they sprouted them. And then they're planted in a ring around this walkway. And these are like where certain treaties are signed or certain standoffs where, or this was a famous tree used by both Native Americans and pioneers when they were traveling as a wave marker because it's so distinctive. So all these famous, really well-known trees got their kids, planted them in a circle, and right now they're fairly small, but 50 years from now, that's going to be a towering grove of incredible trees that Neat. Will just, you know, I can just see that 50 years. It's going to be amazing. I probably won't live to see it, but I imagine it'll be astronomical. But that's, talk about a lifetime's work of just growing these.
Was it her campaign that the Don't Mess with Texas came from also?
Exactly.
I thought that was that.
Yeah, that was the Clean Up Texas. She also cut down the number of billboards that are around just so that help, you know,
beautify the highways.
Yep. Not just be kind of like advertising trash everywhere. New Hampshire has a similar philosophy of, you know, people are here to look at the beautiful state. Let's not clutter it up with all kinds of signage and billboards. So you can actually do nice drives in New Hampshire without like signs blocking your view. And there's the same philosophy down here. And it really, it's nice, especially in the spring. I'm going to say, if you come to Texas and you want to see the best time of year, now is it. End of March, beginning of April is the absolute best time, hands down, in Texas to come and see it because it is beautiful. The rest of the time it's either on fire or it's brown. But end of March, beginning of April is balmy and beautiful and everything's green and the wildflowers are going crazy.
Like 2 weeks ago, our yard was almost completely this tan color because the grass was all dead for the winter. And now it's exploding right now.
Yes.
All my bushes are flowering out front and everything. It's such a really nice.
Mm-hmm. It's nice around here as well because like the lawn crew is actually leaving any flowers that are around. So like there's little purple patches of flowers that are in the grassy lawns around. So it's nice to have these little splotches of color amongst the regrowing grasses. Cause yeah, it was all super dead. I need to segue into the
interview.
So as always, find us on Patreon, patreon.com/southpawscast. Find us on Twitter at Savin Drake, at Southpawscast, at Fuzzwolf, at Chimera, KHYMAERA.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to go into the interview. Enjoy.
All right, here we are at HavenCon. We have a special guest joining us this week. We have Cody Melcher. He is are you the MC this year of HavenCon?
Yeah, Master of Ceremonies, yeah.
Yeah, and you were Master of Ceremonies also last year, correct?
I was the VIP Entertainment.
Ah.
Yeah, and then I also did a panel.
Had you been to HavenCon before that, or was last year your first year?
I had not. According to Shane, I was recommended to him by Janet Varney. Mm-hmm. as a stand-up, because so what happened was it was kind of a confluence of events. I was one of a list of people given to Shane as stand-ups because the VIP vote was for stand-up as the entertainment for the dinner. Mm-hmm. And around the same time as that happened, I contacted Shane because I do a podcast called Tomefoolery, which is about really weird and messed up books. Mm-hmm. So, like, everything from, like, just bad and, like, very weird books to, like, conspiracy theory stuff. And then bad political. Mm-hmm. And I was trying to figure out ways to get the word out. And so I was like, okay, a gay convention in Texas, that sounds like something that would work for me. That's kind of the market for mm-hmm. me. And I'm from Austin, and so I could see my family and that kind of thing. So I messaged him just saying, hey, when are you putting table like spaces up for sale in the hall? And he wrote back with like, oh, there'll be a couple months. And then he wrote a second email and was like, wait, are you Cody Melcher, the stand-up comedian? And I thought he knew me through Catherine, who works with Out Youth and Hanhaven Con, because Catherine, I was the assistant programs director for the Austin Gay and Lesbian International Film Festival when Catherine was the programs director.
Oh, neat.
So I thought that's how he knew me. And apparently that was not it. So it was like a weird,
happy
mishmash. Yeah. And I'd heard of Haven Con. I was like that. I heard about it to contact them through Catherine. But just like a weird amount of events kind of conferred on the same spot.
So we met Haven through, and I know our listeners have heard this. So 3 years ago, Saverin and I went down to PAX South, and we were looking around. We saw a diversity lounge. It's like, oh, cool, because diversity is not really all that big in gaming.
Yeah.
Go up there. There's a whole bunch of female artists, a whole bunch of this. And here's this guy talking about this LBGT nerd gaming whatever convention. And it's like, wow, this is really cool. This is our people. These are gay nerds. This is. And we went up to him. It's like talking to him. It's like, have you heard of this market you may want to capitalize on? Because it's kind of right where you're aiming for. It's this thing called furry. And because there's a whole bunch of LBGT nerds in furry, like mm-hmm. mad. And so he hadn't really heard about it, didn't know all that much about it. And so we invited him up to TFF the following year, because that was in April. And then our con was like a month. No, that was in February. And our January, whenever PAX was. Then we were like a month later. So he's like, bring some flyers, come up. And because I'm the vendor liaison for TFF, I was like, I'll give you a table, put out your stuff, advertise to a whole bunch of semi-local, you know, LBGT nerds, mm-hmm. and maybe get some more. And he came up and was like, holy crap. Here's like all here's a huge section of the population I didn't know how to reach out to. Because it's a huge cross-section of our fandom.
Yeah.
And he kind of fell down the rabbit hole after that.
Yeah, the rest is history.
So we've been really supportive and tangentially related to Haven Con on a personal level since running into him at PAX South. Mm-hmm. We've interviewed him on the show. We've gotten out words. We tweeted. We have been, on a personal level, really big proponents of Haven Con from the get-go, because it's our people. Gay nerds are awesome. So that's how we came across Haven Con mm-hmm. from the get-go. And then I guess from your interaction with Haven Con, I'm not sure. I know that somebody reached out to you to come to TFF, some show there.
Yes.
I know, because I booked your travel.
Yeah.
Because that's one of the many hats I wear for TFF, is I buy all the travel for everybody and get them to TFF. I don't know how I ended up doing that, but I've been doing it for now like 8 or 9 years.
And it was very much appreciated, though.
I think
like Path and Sable saw me do the stand-up.
Yeah.
I know that there was, like, a small group of people. Because mm-hmm. then I talked to Balson about it. And so, they just reached out. But that was through Haven Con. Yeah, mm-hmm. that was meeting stand-up here.
So, I know you've done Haven Con. You saw flavors of furry there.
Yeah.
And then we brought you up into the whole...
to the
whole shebang that is TFF, which is fourth or fifth. We flux around there, largest in... the world.
Yeah.
Because
it's only growing.
Yeah. And but we keep on average, we usually hold about our place. We haven't we once we got up to around 4 or 5, we've been hovering there and keeping about our place for like the last couple of years. When BLFC, one of the other cons, came in, they kind of knocked us down a peg. But other than that, we've been holding steady for...
Yeah. We've actually gone up. We were like 6 or 7, and now we're number 4.
Well, yeah.
There's a lot of movement at the top right now, too, which is really interesting.
Yeah.
So you're not part of the fandom. Were you aware of furry before you...
I do actually consider myself technically part of the fandom now.
Now.
After TFF. But before TFF, persona. No. I was actually... Yes, I was very aware of it, because I've been... I've been in like nerd circles and what I lovingly call outcast circles for a long time, which, you know, just like non-mainstream. So pretty much everything that is at a, you know, typical not Comic-Con comic book convention or gaming convention, nerd convention.
Because geekdom has become so mainstream. Yeah, you get to Comic-Con.
Yeah. Last time I went to Comic-Con was the first time Twilight was there, which is kind of considered the year that Comic-Con kind of started getting ruined, basically.
Yeah.
If you're the type of person that sees the change in Comic-Con as like a movement away from it, where it started becoming more of a multimedia and more major tentpole films and stuff, that was the year of Avatar. It was the year of Twilight.
That's been a while ago now.
Yeah, yeah. I was in college, I think, at the time. That was and so that was the last time I went to Comic-Con in San Diego. And so. Yeah, so like the weirder like niche groups, I was always kind of aware. I've had furry friends in the past. And presently, and more so now, obviously. But I was like vaguely aware, but more from like a like having friends in the same way that you have friends that like
Star
TV
Trek.
Shows or movies that you're not familiar with. Yeah, where you're like, I have vague knowledge of those things, but right. I'm not. You know, like I don't watch The Walking Dead, but I know I can name you a couple.
I know who Daryl is. That's basically it.
I can name you a couple of characters, and I can tell you kind of a general concept of what the show is about.
There's zombies. There's some meme about
there's Coral
dead inside.
there's like King Ezekiel. I know, and the guy with the baseball bat. And like, you know, but it's a very similar kind of deal where it's like, and I know it from like a documentary standpoint because I've seen a couple of documentaries on it. And so the problem is that all of that knowledge base doesn't really flesh out any kind of fandom whatsoever. So it's actually interesting because I think it was Path was actually talking about this on Twitter recently, where he was asking about if people believe that like a fursuit is required to be a part of the fandom.
Oh man.
And so that was actually a thing that I did think. I thought to be a furry, you specifically had to want to or own or, you know, want to or own one, a fursuit.
I've run for several years TFF's Facebook group before it grew quite as big as it is. And there's so many new folks that join up and says, I don't have a fursuit. Can I still come?
Yeah.
And like we're like, oh, honey. No. Only maybe a third of people have them.
Right.
And of them, you can only wear shag carpet for so long before you have to get out and be like in normal clothes for a while because they're hot.
Right.
They're scratchy.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I wear a suit and I'm sweating like crazy.
Yeah.
But
there's this perception, like you said, of...
Well, because I think it's very similar to what happens on the news. Because like even among the fandoms or among just like documentaries that are made by furries, and it's like, and they're not trying to put a negative slant on it, it's just the more, you know, quote unquote interesting people or characteristics or things get kind of spotlit, you know.
They're the most visual aspect of the fandom.
If you watch Trekkies or Trekkies 2, you know, they're gonna show the Klingons and the Borg
the Klingon
more
wedding.
Than they're gonna show someone wearing a t-shirt just hanging out, you know.
Yeah,
because
right.
they're trying to show you these are the really cool, interesting parts. And the fursuits are really cool. One of my favorite things at TFF was the parade, but because of that, you this outside perspective is that like that the fursuit is central to being a furry and not the actual fandom element. Like I had never heard to it referred to as a fandom until between HavenCon and TFF, and by having it referred to as a fandom to me, it made it seem more open because it's like, oh, central premise is just being a fan of this concept.
Because you can be a Trekkie without having to wear a Starfleet uniform.
Exactly, exactly. But when you watch any like Trek documentary, all you see is Starfleet and Borg and Klingon uniforms.
I will say that about Comic-Con. When you see footage of Comic-Con and you have pans of the dealer's den and such, or whatever, the vendor hall or whatever they call it, you see not just a couple of people. You usually see like Deadpool or somebody posing. But in the background, you see a sea of people in just T-shirts and jeans.
Yeah.
So it's very obviously that they are unique out of the crowd,
right?
And most everybody else is just dressed in swag, like they'll have a nerdy T-shirt,
right?
But Deadpool is one of a unique. Not everybody has to come as a comic book hero,
right? I think it's when you start getting into niches, because then you're trying to kind of introduce people to the concept, because like the concept of being like a fan of something, like it's like Comic-Con is just, hey, do you like movies or TV shows or comic books? That's kind of a more general concept. Mm-hmm. When you start getting into the smaller groupings, you know, like when you look at footage of like people waiting in line to see Star Wars, like for opening night, when they do the whole waiting for a week before it opens, almost all those people are wearing costumes, because that's the type of person who does that.
That's the diehards.
And they also just are more visually engaging, and if you're, and you know, and even if you're making a favorable documentary, or and a documentary, even not even just in terms of actual film footage, but like pictures, any sort of writing about it, you're always going to kind of spotlight the more engaging, interesting ones, because that's just kind of how media works. Even if you are doing favorable media, because it's, you know, it's the hero's journey, not the sidekick's journey. So it's they always try to spotlight the more interesting looking. It's the same thing we tried to do at the cosplay competition earlier today at HavenCon. Was we tried really hard to spotlight, like, yes, this is a competition, and we're actually trying to work on not making it a competition in the future.
Just more like a showcase.
Yeah, more like a parade, because it's like it's a competition, but everyone put effort into being here and into doing the cosplay. So, you know, just because you might have the money or the ability, you know, tailoring wise or something, to make a better costume than someone else, doesn't mean that
you're not awesome.
Yeah, and that like that you're better. And so like there's kind of that disparity in like fursuits, because it's like, yeah, the people who have fursuits have the ability to purchase a fursuit. And I'm not saying that they're necessarily inherently wealthier than other people, because sometimes it's just allocation of funds. I was talking about that actually with TFF with somebody who was I think was brought there by a friend, and they came by my table, and they were talking about how they couldn't imagine spending that kind of money on a fursuit. And I was like, well, I mean, people spend a bunch of money on a sports car, or, you know, a vacation or something. This is a fursuit. If that's the way that you spend your leisure time, if that's how you relax, if that's something you enjoy, you know, especially in a hobby, people spend hundreds of dollars on Lego sets. People spend lots of money. But because of a lot of the outside influence and perception of furry fandom, because I think it's seen as so specific and narrow, people don't really see it as like the same thing as Star Trek or Star Wars.
Well, even in some other fandoms, like some of the costumes get very expensive.
Exactly.
Like I've seen some of the price lists to get a really good vacuform stormtrooper.
Yeah. Oh,
where it's just not random pieces that you put together, but where it's molded for you.
Yeah. What are we talking about?
Stormtrooper.
No, I know. I mean, price wise, what are we talking about?
A couple grand, just like a fursuit. Yeah.
I mean, okay. I've seen, you know, off the factory floor stormtrooper costumes for a lot of money. I mean, anybody like a Darth Vader costume that isn't a Halloween costume is expensive.
Yeah.
Even the Star Trek uniform that I'm putting together, because I'm going to the Star Trek convention in Vegas this year with my boyfriend. Even the Star Trek uniform that I'm trying to put together, I'm doing a DS9 gray shoulder.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's a couple hundred to get like a screen quality nice one, because if I'm gonna go to a couple of cons in this uniform, I want to get a nice one that's gonna hold up and everything and look good. And so it's an investment, you know. But I mean, I have friends who spend tons of money on tickets to go to basketball games. And in my mind, I'm at least getting something that I'm keeping for a long time versus like one night. And, you know, you could make an argument.
You can always drag it out for every Halloween from the going forward.
Well, yeah, and especially like things like Star Trek uniforms or furry costumes or anything is like it. Yeah, it's something you can wear like to every Halloween. You can wear it to every con. You can you're going to get it a lot. My mom, when we were growing up, used to have this philosophy about when you spend a lot of money on something. She also used it because my family, when we were growing up, had a lot of weight problems. And so one thing she would always say is, like, when you spend money on food, you're spending money on lunch, not the actual food. Because she had a hard time with the way her parents raised her when she was growing up, like, where she felt like she needed to eat all the food.
Mm-hmm.
And she would always tell us, like, no, you paid for lunch. So it's like you paid $20 for lunch. And then if you're eating your burger and you finish, or like you get halfway through and you're like, I'm done with this burger, then you don't need to like force yourself to finish it because you feel like you're wasting the money that you spent on it.
That's a really good point of
view.
Yeah,
you spent the money on lunch. You didn't spend the money on the burger.
I hadn't heard of that.
Eat everything on your plate thing is very common in parenting.
I did not grow up well off, so the thing of eat everything I put in front of you because that's all we had.
Yeah.
That was a big part of my growing up. So I feel really, I know what you mean. I feel bad leaving food on the table because it's, I grew up poor and you ate what you were given because that's what you had. But that's a very actually new concept.
You're allocating the amount of money that you're spending to the meal, not to the actual food. So it's
to the experience.
How much do we want to spend on lunch today? And then the food fits into that price element. But you enter into a bargain with yourself that, okay, I'm going to spend $20 on my lunch today or $15 or, you know, $50 on my lunch today. And then whatever it takes to complete me having lunch is all that is required of me because the money was spent on feeling full at the end of lunch or satisfied at the end of lunch, and that is all.
That's an actually interesting mindset I hadn't heard before.
So similarly, she had a philosophy about when you spend a lot of money on clothing, like if you want to treat yourself to getting like a really nice shirt or something, you divide it over the amount of times that you wear it.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're like, man, I would really love to get that really nice dress, think about whether it's going to be like are you going to spend that much money on wearing it one time, or is it going to be something you're going to wear all the time? Because then if you get to a point where if you're like, I love this dress, I'm going to wear this dress like every week because it's great, then you divide that over the time of the life of that dress. And then, you know, you can get to a point where you spent like $3 a week on wearing that dress, mm-hmm. even though the initial input might have been a couple hundred.
Mm-hmm.
But
that makes sense.
So it's a similar kind of deal where it's like, okay, so I could take a vacation to Hawaii or I could buy a third of a fursuit. Yeah. Depending on how cheap your Hawaii is or expensive your trip to Hawaii is. But,
right.
And so it's like there is an element of like experience is great, but it's like, but if you're going to wear that fursuit all the time and if it's going
to
make you happy.
Go to the monthly fursuit meets and wear it.
Right. Yeah.
Go and to
if,
cons
if you're,
and wear
if it's going
to
make you happy and it's because it's also going to be a part of future experiences. It's going to make future experiences better for you. And especially because for a lot of people, fursuits kind of help them bring out their own personality,
mm-hmm.
Or at least a different personality that
or
is that
deal
is
with social anxiety.
Exactly. There's so many different anxiety elements and mental health elements built into it as well for a lot of people. And it's like, so there's so many elements wrapped into it. So it's not even that you need to be incredibly wealthy to have a fursuit. You need to obviously have the ability to afford to spend on yourself in a non like emergency necessary manner. You know, if you're in the poverty level, obviously you can't allocate money aside because we're talking about, well, do you go to Hawaii or do you get a fursuit? It's like, yeah, not everybody goes, well, should I go to Hawaii this year? But
right. Should I get a fursuit or should I pay my rent?
Exactly. If you're in that element, then obviously that's kind of a cutoff. There's
a little
cliff.
Different.
We've seen, I mean, all fandoms are laced with this. People who make bad choices for the sake of either A, material, or B.
Oh, yeah.
And some things like, I mean, it's not just fursuit. I've seen people in cosplay go down the rabbit hole and, oh, shoot, how do I pay rent?
Oh, yeah.
How do I eat?
Yeah.
I mean, obsession, it crosses fandom boundaries over the place.
I mean, it crosses all boundaries. A lot of, you know, so many people, regardless of monetary background, make, you know, impulsive decisions or poorly thought out decisions or even well thought out decisions that somehow can go south. Yeah. You know, you could buy a fursuit and then lose your job and you weren't expecting to, you know, mm-hmm. things happen. But so the thing is that when you're looking from the outside in on the furry fandom, it seems very fursuit specific and centric.
Yeah, it
and
does.
I still don't really have a desire or want to wear a fursuit personally. That's not how that's not something that I feel interested in. Just like I'm a really big Star Wars fan, but I've never purchased any Star Wars costuming.
Well, if you look at us, I've thought about maybe making a fursuit, not so much buying a pre-made mm-hmm. one, but that's because I'm a crafty person.
Yeah.
But Fuzz here is a publisher and he prints books and writes. Yeah. So, and we're both big literary nerds.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're all in. That's something I like about the fandom in general is it's got something for everyone. Like mm-hmm. if you're not into the costuming and the performance aspect of it, there's the artists, there's the writers, yeah. there's lots of furry musicians now. Also. Yeah.
Dancers. Oh my God. The dance.
Oh, I know. The dance competition was amazing at TFF last year.
Yeah,
that was great.
Yeah,
you've got and Saverin's part of the gaming
yeah.
community. I mean, there's so many aspects of what goes on.
Yeah, and I'd seen a lot of the art, and mm-hmm. I'd seen a little bit of the writing before even, but it always kind of seemed secondary. In the same way that writing, and I'm sure, like, because I'm a writer, I'm sure you all know this about writing. Like,
yeah.
sometimes it can get overshadowed by other art forms that are more visual.
Well,
you know,
yeah. It takes longer to appreciate.
Yeah, you have to read someone's work in order to go, oh, you're good at this. Versus like a painting, you can just look at the painting go, and then evaluate it. Yeah,
right.
You don't need to go. Let me walk away for an hour and look at this painting, and I'll come back and tell you about it.
A picture comes up on Twitter. It's like, oh, that's pretty, and you instantly catalog. Somebody posts a link to the story. You have to then dedicate however long it takes to get through it before you can actually go, damn, that's good.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just a lot more snap judgment. And I think that's one reason why furry writing doesn't get as – it's not as consumable. It's not like something you can snap and go and – because you have to dedicate so much of your time to it.
Yeah.
And I do that to books all the time.
This is why we focus on getting really pretty covers.
Mm-hmm. Right. No, yeah.
And I like to see that as sort of a good coexistence with the art community because the art is so visual. And we've had some artists that have been really helpful with us of like really promoting the piece that they did.
Yeah.
Getting their fans invested in it.
Well, I mean, and that kind of goes hand in hand with two things, which is that it's a really supportive community, which is also something when I came back from TFF, I was talking to a friend of mine about it, and they were like, yeah, the only thing I know about furries is that they pay their artists. I was like, that is correct, and also a very specific thing to know about a fan group.
Yeah.
But it's true. I mean, like, you know, I'm terrible with names for some reason. The website Fur Affinity.
Yeah.
I'm on Fur Affinity, and yeah, like people are paying good prices and doing well. I was talking to an artist in the dealer's room earlier today, and they were talking about how, because they do general cons, but they also do furry cons, and they were saying that, like, yeah, at furry cons, more often than not, they will get paid at like more than they're asking for.
Yeah,
for
tipping commissions is actually
and
stuff.
Yeah, and they're like, that happens nowhere else, at no other conventions. Like,
furries will frequently tip.
Yeah,
on commissions.
Yeah, and it's impressive, and so similarly, the issue with the writing. Because I was talking to Sable about this, because I was trying to figure out if I can come back for TFF next year, some of the things I could do. Because I'm trying to work on. This is going to be weird business talk. I'm trying to work on making
more
money.
It's okay, we do it all the time.
Yeah, I'm trying to work on making more money when I go to cons. Because my problem is right now, I'm not really a known entity. I'm just kind of a performer who is hired to do the job at the place. Mm-hmm. But then they usually give me a table to kind of help me supplement some funds. And so I'm trying to figure out different ways to do that because, like, right now in the dealer's den at HavenCon, people just kind of know me as the master of ceremonies. They don't know my career outside of this convention.
Right.
And so all the stuff that I have at my table is kind of stuff that you need to, like, talk to me for a second to figure out if, like, what's going on there.
Yeah.
So I was talking to Sable and Bowson from TFF about the possibility of trying to do, like, writing commissions during cons, similarly to how people get badges made, where, like, in the morning people come up and I have, like, a form that's like, you know, give me the name of your character, some descriptions, maybe a picture if you have one. Obviously, if it's furries, they're gonna have art, and I can see that.
Right.
So, like, you know, I'll take a picture of your badge, and then give me, like, you know, a location, and, like, inciting it, like, so basically Mad Libs. And then I write a, you know, 1,000-word story, something, and it doesn't exist. And so I just, like, at night, try to write out a couple. And like, so the problem is I don't know how many of those I could do in one night. If it's not enough, it's not enough.
It's kind of like drawing. I mean, I have a whole bunch of folks who do take home work, which is basically they fill up during the day. Mm-hmm. Then they usually have a whole pile of them will go back to a house or a hotel room and they'll sit and draw until the wee order morning.
Yeah.
And then they'll come back to a con and they'll hand it out and pick up a couple more. And they usually load up on Friday and part of Saturday. Mm-hmm. And then they might, a couple of them, it's gotten less these days, will actually take sketchbooks home with them. Draw and mail it back.
Yeah.
Which is risky because occasionally whole sketchbooks will go missing. But I'm not sure with writing, it takes so much. I mean, it takes time.
I'm trying to beat out that rug because I think there's something. I think the direction to take it in is YCH, mm-hmm. Your character here.
Yeah, we're very familiar.
So like literally applying the Mad Libs concept to it where basically it's like a 1,000-word story. And maybe you're only changing 300 words in it. Mm-hmm. So like you're changing the character's name, you're changing descriptors, and then maybe you make it like a full story with an arc in it, but you change maybe the climax and resolution a little bit, mm-hmm. so that it's still specific to each person. But then that way, because it's not like everybody's going to take their story away. I mean, you be honest and clear to them what you're doing with it, and you did write the story ahead of time, so it is still your writing, and you're clear to them that like this is what's going on. But it's not like everybody's going home and like sharing the stories with each other and going like, well, why are they so specifically similar to each other? But I think looking at Tumblr's. Like furry tumblers and also other fandom tumblers where you see commissioned writing, you can see people will ask on Tumblr for something and they'll get like, four paragraphs back that's mm-hmm. just about a very specific incident that they want or something, which is, not to conflate the two, because I know that happens too much with the furry fandom. But similarly, John Ronson just did a podcast called The Butterfly Effect, which is about Pornhub and free porn's effect mm-hmm. on the porn industry. Mm-hmm. And the porn industry has moved into doing specific porn. So you commissioned porn where you write them like one man that was featured in it sent a stamp collection he'd been collecting his entire life to these people. And he was like, I want a group of girls to come in from the pool, find my stamp collection in a house, make fun of it, and then rip it up and burn it. And then I come in and I'm upset about it and they make fun of me and then we have sex. And they had made
that's
that
really
and it was
specific.
Like a ton of money. Yeah, but porn's weird about that.
Wasn't where I was thinking and they lick all the stamps and they put them all over.
No,
them.
He wanted them to like destroy the stamp collection. I mean, there's somebody that's on DeviantArt who requests from artists a wealthy, buxom, middle-aged blonde woman who is piling her basket filled with bread, like white bread, that is way overpriced.
What?
I've seen that.
Yeah. And so it's wish fulfillment. And so it's like, so even removed from erotica, especially in the furry community, it's a character you have in your head and not everybody's a writer. Mm-hmm. And
they
and
can't
so
express it.
Yeah. And so it's just wish fulfillment. So I think there is a market if you really just kind of treat it as Mad Libs Plus, mm-hmm. where you kind of, you create, because I mean, also every story has been told over and over again. You create basically a hero's journey of furrydom. And then you just kind of plug and play those specific characters because they just – you did the work. You did the writing, and they just kind of want to see their character.
So this kind of tangents it to so if you're going to sell stuff at cons, mm-hmm. how comfortable are you with porn? Because we're not going to lie.
No, I know.
And Fuzz can tell you.
Because I immediately thought with the bathrooms, like some of the questions just, okay, how many nipples? 16. Okay.
Yeah.
How many penises?
Which holes?
Oh, no, I'm very comfortable with porn and erotica. I get uncomfortable with porn and erotica in the sense of like I personally do as a human being just because like I'm like a Victorian, I'm like a Victorian small child. So mm-hmm. I clutch my pearls a lot. Like I just like, I have a stand up bit about how I, are we allowed to get adult on this show?
Oh, yes.
Okay. Absolutely. I have a stand up bit about like how I started masturbating to the Federalist Papers. Like that was legitimately how I like my sexual awakening was the Federalist Papers. And like, I basically right now, I practice, like, I can't even say sex words sometimes. Like, I only recently stopped referring to it as in flagrante delecto. So, when I practice onanism, as it were,
I usually will ruin just watch, you. Oh my God.
Yeah, I just look at, like, shirtless dudes and, like, read erotica. Like, I don't even watch porn, really. Because it's. Like, I don't like even, like, naked pictures of people, really. I don't know. I want some mystery,
some more, like,
I guess.
Some pinup, kind of?
Yeah. Yeah, just, like, literally just shirtless dudes. Like, I can a swimsuit calendar is fine for me. So
you're that market.
Yeah, but I can also, like, I can, especially for work, for money, I can move into that direction, and I'm comfortable enough and knowledgeable enough in the art form because I've read a fair amount.
Back in the day,
yeah.
So there, I'm pretty vanilla when it comes to stuff. I do a lot of, I used to draw a lot more than I do now. I was one of the furry artists, and I did a lot of like usually cheesecake pinups, mm-hmm. but I took commissions, and let me tell you, there are a couple commissions that I got paid fairly well for, where I'm like, I don't get this. I'll do my best at it, but I don't get it. I'll draw it, but whatever.
Yeah.
Okay. And I've got the worst part of it is the most what the fuck is my most favorited piece on Fur Affinity. It's like,
that's how it always is.
It's like I've got ones that I am so much more proud of, and it's that weird ass one.
It's always the
it's
weird
got
one.
The highest, you know, likes, watches, whatever you want to call it. On it's like of all the ones that I did, it's that one.
It's always that one.
It's that one. So
log in and save that, right?
Yeah, I mean, like the way I see the future of writing at furry conventions is. There was there used to be a VHS special order series called You Are the Star. I don't know if any of you have ever heard of that.
No, but we can Google.
Doesn't sound familiar. But yeah.
So literally all it was the company had made a series of animated movies, poorly done animated movies.
Right.
And you picked the story from one. So like one was about like a celebrity, one was becoming a sports star, and you sent a picture of yourself, usually your child. It was usually a thing parents got their kids mm-hmm. in with it, and they just uploaded the picture into like a headspace, like a cardboard cutout, basically that the main animated character was, and you just watched and like the character, and they just figured out ways to not ever refer to the character by name.
Mm-hmm.
I think they would just call you all the time.
There's video games have done that for years, where you could call it, I don't know, Snuffleupagus.
Yeah,
and like, it'll just say, "Welcome, hero.
Yeah,
hello, adventurer,
dude." Because I mean, it was basically, and I think they said you a lot because it's basically like, you know, a cat video for children, like one of those dog videos that you leave on for your dog. It was basically that for kids. And but all that was wish fulfillment, because it was like, I want to be a sports star.
Mm-hmm.
And so I honestly think, like, you know, if I set up a table and I was like, all right, you get a 1,000-word story, you can pick from 10 of these, 3 of them are adult, and or pay extra and I'll do a, you know, 500 word, 300 word, very specific about what you want.
Or you can even do, for this amount of money, you'll do this much deviation.
Right. Yeah. Like, and yeah, you could have levels on that even, you know, where it's like, I'll change, you know, like this, you know, it'll be this much difference. It'll be this much difference. You know, do you want to just plug your name in? Or do you want to plug in like whole characteristics and change the outcome? You know, choose your own adventure is like that too. You know,
I can see that.
Choose your own adventure where it's like, hey, do you want this? And then you want a happy ending, you want a sad ending. What do you want? I think it just requires, which writing always does. It just requires a little bit of canniness, which is why I'm a raccoon. But you just got to find the right mousetrap, and I think the problem is. looking at writing as visual art and treating it solely as that and not trying to figure out, okay, but what's writing do differently? Because like you with YCH, you have to kind of use a more general form for like a drawing, because you're not going to just be like, hey, here's a picture of a dog, and then like, well, could you put my deer in that dog? And you go, okay, well, I'll just put your deer's head on the dog body. Like that, somebody would go, that doesn't work for me. But with writing, you can kind of cut those edges, because writing is in the head more. It's visual. It's visual inside yourself, not outside of yourself. Mm-hmm. And so all you have to do is create the image correctly in their head. And so it's just about figuring out the similarities and the differences in what is already a successful form in the furry community.
I would also recommend have a way to digitally deliver this that way, so they can put it up on Fur Affinity, because that's number one, what they're going to do with it.
Yeah. Well, no, my plan would be like email it to them, and then they can tell me if they want me to print it out for them as well. You know, maybe even do a binding system or something. Like, if you can bring like quick binding systems, or even a lot of the places, like the current hotel for TFF has a Kinko's inside of it. So you could even do a thing where it's like, yeah, if you want to pay a little extra, I'll run down to Kinko's and get it bound for you. Or format it in a PDF file with like a cover and everything, and give it to them, and they can go to Kinko. Deliver it to them in a digital format that they are able, both in just regular plain text and in a PDF format where you've created a cover page and everything, so that they could also, if they want to go bound it or something, and have it physical.
Fuzz doesn't know anything about binding books, do you?
So when we started with our company, we used to make all the books and comics ourselves by hand with binding.
I remember helping with this.
Okay.
And then we got to a point where we were like, yeah, we don't have time to do this anymore.
Oh, man.
And the first furry fiesta, we made, 300 con books, the actual 8.5x11 staple bound and folded.
Oh, wow.
I will say, though, because you would get your covers printed elsewhere professionally, then we bring it back to your apartment, you'd have that big-ass printer that would fire off all the sheets.
Yep.
And then we would all sit and it would all get stacked, because I helped you do a couple of these.
Yeah, because I was like, I was the con staff.
Well, not even that, like when you're doing your full books, not just the... And you'd assemble all this, and then you trim it down, and you put it in this binder, and the glue would come out, and it would cut all the edges, and you go from having this random-ass stack of paper to, I've got a book that just looked like it came off a shelf at Borders.
Yeah.
This is fucking cool.
There is a kind of magic about making that last cut, and then you pull out a trade paperback. And
It's awesome. Amazing, especially if you're any kind of book lover.
Yeah.
Where it's like... Oh, it's mint. It's so pretty.
And I realized we should have promoted as handmade.
You really should have. Yeah.
Because they're artisanal furry books.
First of all, that's great. That's just a great name for something. Because I was just thinking that because I had, because I have at HavenCon right now, I have the book transcript version of my comedic essay album that's coming out on the 19th.
Cool.
That I'm selling. And I had it self-published through Lulu, I think is the name of the company.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, that's one.
And so, like, as a, as somebody whose dream has always been to, like, have a book when I walk into, like, an airport bookstore or something and see a physical thing that has my name on it, it was still really cool to, like, open a box and, like, see these, like, professionally bound books that had my name on them. But I can't even imagine... if I had pulled it out like of the press, or something. Right. If it had come down a conveyor belt at a factory like Willy Wonka, and I'd picked it up and been like, my God,
this wasn't even this. This is like a paper with a glue thing that you went, shock.
Yeah, well, I'm just being honest about the level of skill I have, because I could never get to that point. I would have to be in a situation where everyone else made it for me and I just stood
Fuzz
near them
show
while
you
they
how
did
to make
it.
This.
I would cut my hand off somehow. Even if it's impossible to do, I would
there
still.
There's a safety.
You would be surprised. If anyone's going to get their hand cut off, it's Cody Melcher, I'll tell you that. Or Luke Skywalker, I guess.
Yeah.
Between the two of us, he is slightly more likely.
Yeah.
But yeah.
That's amazing. And I'm glad for you, because that experience, that's something I always wanted to happen. Just open up a box and my stuff.
Yeah.
It's like,
Yeah, I'm trying.
I can't sell any of them, so I'll just have a box around for forever. But you know,
that's me and the mugs that I have for my podcast. But yeah, I'm trying to get the album itself printed on like a CD or something. Mm-hmm. I'm gonna do like a very small amount of those because obviously no one's gonna really buy a CD that much.
Yeah, that's.
But I just wanted to do it because I wanted to get the CD of it, you know?
Do you have a Patreon or anything else like that?
I have a Patreon right now that is for my podcast and my YouTube and my writing, technically. The problem is a lot of the stuff... I just moved to LA a couple of months ago, and I've been kind of shifting a lot of my career. Mm-hmm. So the Patreon was originally per episode for just my podcast, but now I'm expanding to doing more things. Mm-hmm. And so I made it monthly, and I'm trying to kind of make it a, you know, catch all for like all of the different projects I do. So it's like, hey, if you like this thing I do or this thing I do, both of you can come to the same Patreon.
I love Patreon. It's been such a great format for just getting steadily supporting artists.
Oh yeah, a friend of mine who's a YouTuber makes his entire career off of his Patreon. Like a mix of that and YouTube ads, but like more of the money comes from Patreon, and like they just bought a house. And he's just a professional YouTuber.
That's great.
He's making a living wage off of just the Patreon side, as far as I know. Yeah.
And I've seen everything from comic book artists to, you know, I've got, like I said last week, there's a dude over in India that feeds orphans, and every couple days he puts out something on YouTube of this giant meal he's fed to orphans.
Yeah.
And I'm like, that's so cute.
That's amazing. That's awesome.
And, you know, he's over in India, so a little money goes a long way.
Yeah.
But I've just, some of my favorite artists are on there that I've been following since I was a little kid.
Yeah.
And it's like, wow, just let me throw a couple bucks to you on a monthly level because you're awesome. You've been providing me with so much entertainment through the years.
It's great. It's great from the artist standpoint. I'm a little worried as we move forward with how we're moving away from larger format to more specifics, because we're going to hit a tipping point.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, like right now, I'm supporting a couple of people on Patreon. I have a couple of subscriptions to like some newsletters where it's like writers that I like have like an email list that they go out and you pay for that. And then I have Netflix, Hulu, Amazon Prime. I wanted to get CBS to support Star Trek when they did their streaming. Yeah. And it's like, and now Disney's trying to do theirs and they just moved all their stuff off Netflix. And it's like at a certain point, you know, you're paying too much money. Yeah, if not more.
Cable would be.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's untenable.
To be fair though, at least I'm buying into something I might watch more of versus like how many music channels and how many home shopping networks and 40 pay-per-view channels I never watch.
It makes the intention more specific. Mm-hmm. But I am worried that we will get to a point where you're going to have to start cutting off legs to keep arms.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And that's where kind of my concern starts coming in, where you're going to have to choose. Like there are, because I just moved to LA, as I said, and I don't know why I keep mentioning it, but it's because it's like my life has been in flux so much, so I'm kind of trying to explain that there's an inciting incident, which is I moved to a whole new state. So there are a lot of friends and a lot of artists that I like that I had to like kind of stop supporting because I just kind of I had to buckle down on finances. The amount of money that cost to move and buy new things just was too much. And I had to really like pick and choose, like, okay, people who really need it or things like that.
Sophie's choice of who you keep.
And like, you know, I had to cut off some newspaper subscriptions because I also try to like keep those up, even if I don't read the newspapers, just to kind of like support journalism as a concept.
Right.
And it's like, at a certain point though, I'm spending so much money a month on you know, things, everything here and there, you know, every podcast I listen to, you know, and I don't really listen to music. I only listen to podcasts. So it's like if I gave the amount of money I should and I wish I could to every single podcast I listen to, I would have no money.
Right.
Because I'm listening. Yeah, I'm listening to 10 to 20 podcasts a week, you know.
Wow.
And a lot of those.
Patreon.
Yeah. And if every single one had a Patreon and I gave the amount of money that I felt like I should for the amount of work or content that they produce, you know, it's like like my podcast, Tomfoolery, I have to purchase books. I have to read the book. I have to do more research. I have to get a guest and then get them to read the book.
Mm-hmm.
And then now we pay the guests as well because I felt bad, especially making them read a whole book, especially a bad book. It's not even a book that they're going to be like, wow, that was a really good book. Thank you for letting me read that. Like, it's, you know, like I just made someone read David Icke's newest book, which is 700 pages long, specifically about a reptilian conspiracy theory.
Oh my God.
And it's like, yeah, I'm sorry. Like, so
was that from your slush file, Fuzz?
So like, I had to give him
furries only, no reptilians.
Yeah.
Scalies.
So I gave him money for that. You know, like I pay the guests to come on because it's like, hey, thank you for doing this. You did actual homework to be on the show. And so at the end of the day, and then paying for, like, you know, Libsyn and paying for the website hosting for for the actual website that we have. All of the money that I make from Patreon goes immediately back into the podcast. And so I make no money for the amount of time and effort that I put into it.
Right.
Which is, you know, fine. But after you do it I'm coming up on 6 years now, and I'm sure as you all know, because you've been doing yours for so long, you know, after a while it's like, okay, but I am putting a lot of time on this that I am not putting on other things that I could be making money on or something. And, you know, a labor of love, quote unquote, can only be so much when it is technically supposed to be your job, which is a big problem that comes up in the stand-up community because people don't think stand-up comedy should make a lot of money.
Art in general is that sort of opinion of, why don't you do this for free? You want $400 to do. It was like something the other day. I want to commission you. Yeah, I want to commission you to make me a crochet quilt. Okay, it'll be $400. Why? How would you dare? Well, it's going to cost me $200 alone just for the yarn.
Yeah.
And then it's going to cost me, I don't know, however many hours. It's basically going to come out to being about $2 an hour for me to make this for you. And, you know, just people's unrealistic.
And the problem is with, like, so, like, I did, I performed at Milwaukee Pride a couple years ago as a stand-up. And I didn't sign a contract for that. So I was not paid. I'm trying to remember am I allowed to tell people that? Yeah. I was not paid to do that. They gave me a hotel room, which was nice, but I wasn't paid to do that. And then there were musicians there who had a guitar case out in front of the stage, and people were throwing money to them. And it's like, yeah, that's just a thing that doesn't exist in stand-up. If we'd put a jar out in front of the stage at stand-up, no one would have really walked up and given us money, partially because people are concerned that if they draw too much attention to themselves when a stand-up's on stage, they're going to get made fun of.
Mm-hmm.
But also,
too many folks have done that in stand-up, and whatever you call the reverse heckle.
Yeah.
You know?
And the problem is, stand-up's kind of, you're never sure what the stand-up's going to be if you don't know that specific person. But then the other thing is, I was talking about this with a musician friend of mine, that I'm of the opinion that comedy is kind of undervalued because everyone's been funny.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone's made a joke to their friends or their family or at work. And a lot of people, a huge section of the population, believe that they could be a stand-up comedian if they really wanted to. or even the ones who don't, they think that the only difference is that they just don't have the strength of will to stand on a stage and talk. But they don't see the kind of work, the kind of writing effort, the behind-the-scenes stuff, the travel, all of that in stand-up. Because as opposed to, like, music, everyone's tried to play an instrument, you know, even in school or something.
And they all go plunk, plunk, plunk.
Right. This sucks. How hard it is. You know the actual – you can visualize and see the actual work that gets put into it and the practice that has to go into it. And also it's a physical item that costs money. Mm-hmm. So it's like, wow, that guitar costs money. So you put in – like, no one thinks that you have to put money in to do stand-up. That it's just like, oh, no, you just walked up on a stage, grabbed a microphone and started, you know, talking. And that's all it is.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, I mean, I've had friends that have had Comedy Central half hour specials and are still like servers at restaurants. I have a friend who right now is an Easter bunny at a mall, and her album was featured on NPR.
Ah,
like, you know, like,
wow.
Comedy does not make money. You like,
unless you get to be really big and well known,
or you're a hardcore road comic who is basically living like a traveling salesman going club to club all across the country. And even a lot of those are shutting down or not paying enough in certain places. Mm. So it's just like such a weird thing. And so it's kind of similarly, I think we're finally coming around where people are viewing podcasts as kind of something where it's like, oh, people are actually putting effort into this. This is something that requires, you know, work, equipment. So we should probably help out. And we're also getting to a point where people, I think, are just more conscious of
creators are people, right, and this takes effort and takes time. It's not
I
edited this stuff all down and actually have all the equipment. So, I mean, it's just like, we set it up and I put forth the effort. I'm the guy that does all the editing and stuff. So,
Yeah, I do all of my editing. I do all of my planning because I also have to spend hours a year just finding the books. And then, like, figuring out which ones. Because we do about two episodes a month. We're every other Monday right now. And I'm by myself. I'm the only host. I'm the editor. And I have to find weird and messed up books. And it's like, you know, the first couple of years, it wasn't the hardest thing in the world. But then now I'm kind of getting to a point where I'm, like, you know, using Amazon recommendations and stuff, or just Googling weird books. Sometimes I'm like, okay, we have too much political stuff this year, so I need to find a weird erotica or something to kind of, like, spice things up a little bit, change it up. 'Cause, like,
what's that one you guys keep quoting for weird erotica? Like, butt? Like, dinosaur?
Oh, Chuck Tingle.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
No, Chuck gets recommended to me a lot. The problem with the Chuck Tingle books is that I try not to do books that are intentionally written
to be
funny.
He knows that they're bad and they're meant to be.
No, the best one that we did, and by best one, I mean the worst one we did, but it's also one of my favorite episodes of the show because I accidentally just end up going off on this speech about how bad writing is a good thing because it shows like an Icarus trying to succeed and failing, and it's beautiful. There's something beautiful in that. So it's this weird speech I give at the end of the episode. But that episode is the book Horny Ghost of Osama Bin Laden. It's not even the Horny Ghost of Osama Bin Laden. It's just Horny Ghost of Osama Bin Laden. That's the title of the book.
What?
It's by PR Resurrector. I do not think that's the real name of the person. It was supposed to be the first in a trilogy. I have been desperate for the next two to come out, but they have not. And it was about, I think it was like 500 plus pages long.
500 pages?
That's a lot of dedication.
It ends with an alien invasion. And so, it's just about Osama bin Laden's ghost just having sex with people against their will. And it's very weird. And there's like conspiracy theories, obviously, because you can't have Osama bin Laden's ghost without conspiracies. But so, like, and I don't even remember how I found that book. But even just that is like, it takes hours for me to just find enough books to fill a year.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not even before I'm editing, before I'm actually having to read the book, you know, the amount of money it takes to purchase all of these books. Sometimes we do like really old books. We did a book that was Don't Make Me Go Back, Mommy, for the Chicago Podcast Festival, which was a children's book that was about
satanic ritual abuse.
Yeah, ritual child abuse. And that book, when I first found it, cost $100 a copy.
Oh.
And I managed to get it at $50 a copy. Because I have to get one for me and the guests. I think that one I had the two guests share it because it was a children's book. So it was like, hey, could you just, like, I think I had them just get there early and they just read it.
Because it between doesn't each take other. That long.
Right. Yeah, right. I seem to recall you had that with you here last year because you had your pile of books and you were adjacent to us.
Yeah, well, because last year I was actually doing tomfoolery here and I also drove here from Chicago. When I lived in Chicago, so I had more space. So I brought all of the, because I sell the tomfoolery books. I have the guests sign them and I sell them as a way to try to make some extra money up. I still have like two boxes full of books from the last couple of years. I'm actually about to do a sale on tomfoolery.com to try to just kind of fire sell, get them out of there.
Now, Fuzz, we usually do this for him, but buy his books.
Yeah, I mean, there's some really cool ones and some really weird ones. We still have one book signed by Mara Wilson, who played Matilda, which is Dental Management, the Genghis Khan Way. Managing Your Dental Practice, the Genghis Khan Way. Signed by Mara Wilson. And in my head, I'm like, who wouldn't want to own a copy of a dental management book signed by Matilda's Mara Wilson? But only one person bought one of the other books, and that took like 2 years, you know. Or I have a Scientology book signed by one of the writers for The Late Show with Stephen Colbert. Who wouldn't want that? So, you know, it's and he actually currently writes Lockjaw, and it's like I would totally. And he wrote Santa's Husband. And he's, you know, you could buy a Scientology book signed by him. In my mind, that seems great, especially for less than it would cost to get an actual Scientology book from the place. And you're not giving money to Scientology. Exactly. You're giving money to a plucky little podcast. But yeah, so I brought all of the books last time. This time I flew out, so I wasn't able to bring the books this time around. But yeah.
Weight limits.
Yeah. And I was just like, yeah. I mean, I brought only like 20 copies of my book, which is like very thin in paperback, and I put those in my carry-on so I wouldn't get busted on it. But
you have to get creative sometimes.
Yeah.
It's like last minute books. You end up like, this box of books is a carry-on now.
Yeah. Yeah. My plan is to just get a carry-on bag and just fill it. If I ever have to get to a point where I bring in a ton of books, and just fill the whole thing with books and then just have like a backpack as my actual carry-on.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then just put that in the overhead and or check it at the gate. But anyway. All of this comes back to the point, which is that from the outside of the furry fandom.
Yeah, as we loop all the way back to the whole purpose of this interview. Yeah, I know we told you it was going to be 30 minutes, but
I'm loquacious, so I apologize.
Well, so are we, so it's okay.
But I never really understood the fundamental entrance points, especially because as I alluded to earlier, and I'm sure a lot of your listeners know, one of the issues in the furry fandom is that it gets conflated so much with the sexual side that it seems like
which is heavily there, but it's not 100%.
But the point that people, I don't think, really realize or recognize is that exists in all fandoms.
Mm-hmm.
It is slightly more visual, or not visual, visible in the furry fandom. I think because there's more visual art in the furry fandom, honestly.
Mm-hmm. I think we're more open about it.
Right. I think, yeah, I think there's also a lot more honesty.
I've heard some stories about Trekkie cons. That
right. Well, I mean, if you just look at some Star Trek stuff, like, you know, there are women who dress up as, you know, the green slave girls. There's Star Trek porn.
The Orions.
I've seen, yeah. Yeah. I've seen Star Trek porn. There used to be a porn bingo here in Austin when I lived in Austin.
Mm-hmm.
What's it called? Parody porn.
Mm.
It was a parody porn bingo.
Yeah,
and they did a Star Trek one with the guy who is like the Picard lookalike who goes to cons as the Picard lookalike. They managed to get him.
Oh.
And so it's like, yeah, there's, you know, people write Star Trek erotica. Like, there's, I mean, I've seen Garrick / fiction.
Oh God, yes.
So art.
Garrick Bashir.
Yes. I mean, there's, if you can go on Twitter and type in or Facebook and type in the GIF part Garrick, and you can get Garrick Bashir GIFs that are / fiction. So they obviously exist in all of their fandoms.
So way back in the day, we used to be sponsored by Adam and Eve.
Okay, sure.
So we used to do this thing where we had a coupon code that we'd give out over the air and everything else. We'd get kickbacks from it before we did Patreon. And so we would do a product of the week. So we'd go on Adam and Eve, we'd find something to review and suggest or whatever. Sometimes it was serious suggestions. A lot of time it was hit up the porn section and find some parody porn to talk about. Yeah. And we found some doozies on there that was hilarious. Yeah.
They had a 1960s Batman one that they showed at that bingo that I am 70% sure had the actual original commissioner from the original.
Oh my God.
If not, they got someone who looks and sounds really, really similar. But yeah, like and my thing has always been that I also, regardless of any adult interest, I'm just very private about sexual life stuff. Other than that, like one bit I have about masturbating to the Federalist Papers, and like my current things, because I am very open and honest about things. But I also am very much kind of like a, hey, you know, like what I do in the bedroom stays in the bedroom, not because I'm ashamed of it, but just because it's like, you know, I also don't tell you like my toilet habits, you know, like,
yeah, there's some things you don't need to share.
Yeah, I'm just very puritanical about certain elements. Well, I don't want to say puritanical because I think that's a misconstruction I feel like we've changed what Puritans were, but that's me as an American history nerd. But it's just like coming from the outside of the furry fandom to tie that in and up.
It, oh, baby?
It was never... Oh, God.
It was all about that.
It was never... It was never, like... It was never really clear what made you a furry.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because it's not...
It's not like Star Trek, you
know? Right, it's not a central thing that you're a fan of.
Yeah.
It's not... Furry is not... Are you a fan of The Lion King?
Mm-mm.
It's like a lot are. It's an entrance point, but I'm sure that there are plenty of furries that aren't really
Zootopia.
Big into The Lion King. Yeah,
Sonic.
I know. Yeah, Zootopia is what I have come to find is like the most.
No,
basic
that's the
furry.
Latest one.
Yeah,
but we had Sonic, we had Lion King, we had Ninja Turtles, we had Thundercats. There are so many.
Yeah, I mean, I realized at TFF that the reason why I like raccoons a lot is because of Sly Cooper,
mm-hmm.
the video game. So, yeah. So the thing is that at TFF, I think I heard someone else telling someone else about what makes a furry. Or it might have even been in, like, the Facebook group or something. Because there were a lot of, like, moms that were quite, like, asking questions about their kids going...
And I am so proud of my little Facebook people where they would come out with, oh, here, there's a, you know, my kid's into this weird thing panel. And no, you don't have to do this. And, yeah, I just, so many of my little group members... Like, I started out giving these answers, and now they jump up and they give the proper answers without me even having to sit there and correct them.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. They've grown up so much.
Yeah, that Facebook
it's so
group
nice.
Was great. I saw so many nice responses to mm-hmm. things.
I think there's actually a Twitter account called Moms of Furries now.
Nice.
Where it's two moms that are
that sounds
that
great.
Are running it together.
Yeah.
Well, I had... I used to... Up until, like, recently, I used to be the president of drama, the ones that... put on TFF, so I used to have the phone number directed to my phone, and I got a voicemail from a very concerned father who wanted to know about it, so I called him back, and we had a half-hour discussion of what to expect and what to do, and he wanted to know, you know, if it's going to be weird if he wears his daughter, who's apparently like 12, made him a costume, and can he, you know, is it going to be too weird if he wears this? Like, no.
Yeah.
You know, thank you for playing along with your child. We appreciate all this.
Mm-hmm.
But I've had a lot of these interactions with parents throughout the years of, you know, all this, and I love it when, you know, folks step up and gently educate without jumping down their throats, and it's great.
Yeah,
I didn't even know that you were part of the Facebook group, and I probably approved you.
Yeah, I forget what happened. I think I was either invited or it was like in one of the email. Like Bowson might have sent it in an email as like a hey, you know, if you want to join this, so you can get some more information before you come down.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I had just joined up just so I could be like kind of aware of what was up.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I mean, and so the thing is just like I never knew what it took to be considered a part of the fandom. And then part of it was also that I had a great time at Haven Con, and that was kind of an entrance point. And I did get a tail when I was here, but I didn't really consider myself part of it.
The guests did last
week. Yeah. Denise Crosby got that rainbow one. Yeah. I had a purple one, just like a plain purple glitter one. Mm-hmm. And so then at TFF, because it was also more specifically furry, it was kind of like a slow walk in where it was just like, I got there and I was like, man, I'm having a really fun time, and especially after the move, and especially because I have never really had a great social life.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a workaholic, and I also just have a hard time meeting people. And my day job is also work at home, so it's like I don't have like work friends. Like I just like literally the only way I meet people is accidentally or through like comedy, which I don't have a lot of stand-up friends. So especially after also moving, I like had no friends at my new in LA. So it was like, oh, this is, you know, nice to actually be hanging out with some people, like getting out of the house. Because at that time, before I went to TFF this last year, I was like going to the grocery store to get out of my apartment and talk to people.
Yeah,
I was at that level. So it was like first day of TFF was like, wow, this is really nice to be out of the house and like communicating with other individuals that seem nice. And I knew three people from HavenCon. And so it was like nice to see some people I knew.
Which is a shame because it was like the first year Shane couldn't make it.
Yeah, through. Yeah. I mean, it worked out. Yeah. But I almost think if Shane had been there, I might have clung too tightly to, like, knowing someone, because I do mm-hmm. that, too. Like, I never go to birthday parties if the only person I know is the birthday person, because then I end up just spending all of my time either bothering them.
I've been there.
Yeah. Right. And then the second day of TFF was, man, this is such a great community. This is so fun. I wish I was a furry. Mm-hmm. And then third day was, oh, I think I'm a furry. So, because mm-hmm. I think between second and third day, I hung out with a lot of people late at night. And so then I went to a lot of panels. And I think that was when I started hearing people talking about what it actually meant. Mm-hmm. And then it kind of clicked in, like, oh, yeah, I mean, I've always liked these elements. And I've always been into, you know, like certain things. I always love the art. You know, I had already been like, oh, yeah, I would totally be a raccoon. Those kinds of things. And so it was just kind of like, it had never, you know.
Oh, so there's a word for this.
Yeah, it's kind of like, it's kind of, you know, not to try to conflate it too much, because it is, I think, it's a mix of a fandom and some other elements, but it's kind of like, you know, being queer, where you're just like, oh, no. Oh, I've always, okay, oh, that's what that means now.
Well, right. That was kind of, it's similar. It's kind of like when I was growing up and I knew I wasn't gay and I knew I wasn't straight because I knew the two words for that.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was reading a Time article and I read it. It's like, oh, bisexual, there's a word for that.
Yeah.
And it's furry's kind of like along the lines of that. It's not nearly the same thing, because we have a lot of people, how do I come out to my parents as furry? It's like, I don't know, the same way you tell me, like, comic books?
Yeah.
It's just kind of like, so you like dog people, you like cartoons, you like werewolves. Werewolves are a great gateway drug.
Right. yeah.
The story I have is a friend of mine, when he was underage, his dad found his stash of furry porn in his bedroom closet. And he's like, okay, so you're gay, I get that, but why are they animals?
yeah. Well, because I think the two biggest concerns. Well, the one issue and one concern. I think the biggest issue is, like I was saying, because it's not a centralized property, so it's just confusing and unclear and nebulous about what it's supposed to be that you're supposed to be into. And then the second thing is that from a sexual aspect, for the people who are interested in the sexual side of it, you know, humanity has always had a history of being overly concerned about sexual interest. So then the concern that, like, slippery sloping into being challenged, et cetera, I'm sure we all know this.
We've been down that slope in the discussion very many times.
And so those are the two things. The second element is not helped by the first element, because you can't just go, no, I'm just a fan of the movie Zootopia, period. You know, like, it's not just like, oh, no, it's just about, like, because, like, if you found my Star Trek porn that I don't have, but if I did, if you found that Star Trek porn, I would just be, you'd be like, what is this? You know, like, wait, do you like alien people? And I could go, oh, no, I like Star Trek.
Captain Jack in it, I think. It might be a large glob.
Yeah.
But you know?
Like, yeah, you wouldn't read a story about, Kirk and Spock having sex and go, oh, so do you want to fly to Mars and have sex with an alien? Yeah, like, you wouldn't extrapolate that into a complete and total larger aspect and make it entirely solely about all aspects of your sexuality.
So you're unable
and
to relate to humans, so you have to you can only have sex with aliens.
Yeah,
you know?
Like, you, because it would be so, it's so property based that you would just be like, oh, it's related to this, and then there might be some other sexual things that aren't even direct, because of the way the human mind works and the way sex works, that aren't even directly related to this at all, that this is just kind of how they're coming out. And even if they are, it's not a bigger issue element. And so I think it's just education, and then the fact that it's so unclear and nebulous that makes it very difficult to educate.
And it also comes down to people don't want to admit that humans are just freaking weird.
Right.
I mean, this kind of aspect of human plus non-human. Go back to the Greek mythos.
Oh, sure.
Go back to all that prehistory. Humans are freaking weird.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and we've been weird for a very long time.
In the opening ceremonies, I talked about how the oldest pickup line in history is between the Egyptian god Horus to the Egyptian god Seth, trying to get him to have sex with him because they'd been fighting for 80 years, and he wanted to win by having sex. It's unclear. But the pickup line was, like, what magnificent buttocks you have. And it's just like, okay, like, you know? And it's just like, and it's like I think one of the bigger issues, too, is by putting the onus of explaining what something is on a geek / nerd fandom, the type of people that are already in that are more than likely going to be people that have, you know, some sort of social
awkwardness
in some capacity, all the way to, you know, mental anxiety or mental issues in general. Like, I have a lot of social anxiety and things, and so you're already taking a subset that is precluded to that because just that's how, yeah, because people in geek and nerd cultures tend to find those tribes because it's people that are
we're safe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so, and then also in furry, because there is such a large set that finds expression through furry, so a lot of them find that through that.
And a lot of them are LVGT.
Right. Yeah. And have also experienced, like, you know, persecution on their own outside of the fandom. Mm-hmm. By putting all of the weight of, hey, I need you to explain what this is to me because it's unclear, because you can't just go watch this television show and that will explain everything. It's very difficult. And so it just it becomes unclear, and then that's when I think you also start getting into some of the infighting and people kind of telling other people how to explain themselves to people, because then it becomes the minority issue that always happens, which is, you know, one person explains their personal history and then everybody extrapolates that to the entire group that they represent, which they may never have claimed to even represent.
Like, I mean, I've seen that happen in gay culture too, where one person tells their story and that becomes a story of all gay or bi.
Yeah, every minority and subset culture. I mean, it's the same thing you see in the news where it's like, you know, one person from Mexico does something and now it's like all immigrants at all are like this, you know, or like one person commits a crime and then suddenly that's that, or, you know, it's all stereotyping, because if you're not a part of the main group, then you're a part of a different thing. And the main group, the things that they do can never be stereotypes about them, because that's quote-unquote normal. Mm-hmm. And anything that deviates from normal is already in a minority group, whether by birth or by choice. You know, there are plenty of minority groups that are choices. Religions are choices.
They fandoms, would tell you otherwise. But
yeah,
you know.
Yeah. Oh, I had a fight with somebody in college one time where they were saying that they were born Christian, but gays choose to be gay. They were like, I could have been born in Saudi Arabia and I would still be a Christian. I'm like, okay, this is such a weird conversation, but sure. But I mean, you know, this is
sure. I choose to be persecuted and hated and have to fear about talking about my other half at
work. Yeah, but I mean, and also the thing is, especially comparing it to Christianity, and this should never be taken out of context. Even if someone chose to be gay, who cares?
Exactly. It should,
if you choose to be Christian, you can, like, it doesn't, you know, you did choose to be Christian. If someone did choose to be gay, it wouldn't matter. Mm. And I don't want that taken out of context somehow online, that I'm not saying that that is what it is. But
Saverin, note this part at the edit. That'll be how we promote this.
So similarly, it's like, when people are put into smaller groups, you start just kind of extrapolating everything that, like, individuals do.
An example is everybody.
Yeah. I mean, you know, again, this is going to be a hot button thing that I'll say, but, you know, religions are fandoms. So, like,
you're not going to get any arguments here.
Right. Yeah. You know, so it's like, I mean, this is something I've only kind of realized recently, but when trying to talk to people about furry stuff, I think the biggest obstacle
for a furry fandom
to be explained is the fact that there's just no one property. Because, like, my boyfriend and I just started dating a couple of months ago, and I wanted him to get into Star Trek, and so we sat down and I showed him a couple of my favorite episodes of Deep Space Nine, and he liked them. And now he's watching all of Deep Space Nine with me or by himself.
I have to say, Deep Space Nine got so much better later on.
Oh, no, I know. that's why we did favorite episodes, because I was like, I didn't want to spoil too much with, like, the Dominion War, but I was definitely like, okay, we're not going to just, like, watch from the beginning.
You'll lose him before you get there.
As soon as Cisco gets the goatee and the bald again.
There's like a couple. I showed him two really good Cardassian ones, and then I showed him House of Quark, which is one of my favorite episodes in all of Star Trek, because it's also just a fun episode. If you have a basic idea, and like most people who don't know Star Trek still know what Klingons are, so it's like they can still kind of go, okay, I kind of get this general concept. And you can explain like three things about what's going on, and it leaves the station, so you don't even get that. And it's just, hey, did you enjoy this episode? Do you like these characters? He likes Quark a lot, so it worked out really well.
Mm-hmm.
But so now he's really into it because he's now watching Star Trek, and so we're going to the convention in Vegas. But I mean, but yeah, that was, hey, sit down and watch Star Trek. If I want to get him into furry, it's like a conversation and taking him to a con more than anything. Because I think to get people really interested, you have to go to the con because, A, it's the community aspect that is also a really great thing about furry fandom. But on top of that, it's also that you can kind of see, like, at once. Just like a Comic-Con, you can see all the different elements that get folded together into it. If I just like logged you onto Fur Affinity, or just showed you Zootopia and like The Lion King and tried to kind of explain the concept of what furries are after you've watched those two things or something, it's not really how it works.
You have to have a diverse exposure in general, and then somebody to say, pull it all together and says, you like that one and that one and that one. Okay. This is a common element about all those, and you pull this thread and this is what this is, but they have to have all those individual experiences. It's kind of like being a generic elf fan or orc fan or you've got a whole fandom dedicated to elves and all their different iterations from Lord of the Rings to ElfQuest. Then you've got a fandom where all you talk about is elves and all their formats.
Right.
And then you have the argument, is this an elf? No, it's not an elf. You know, you have that infighting.
Yeah. But then the problem is that on top of that, you also then have to layer in the fact that it's like, it's not just elves. It's like wood elves, timber elves, you know.
Yeah.
Like, and then Santa elves, and then like the con, like, and then
Keebler elves.
Yeah. Because you also have to like go, well, no, but are you feral, or are you, the different levels.
Do drow count? They're under the ground. Yeah.
Are you a dog?
And they ride spiders.
And so like, because the furries, like, are you a dog? Are you a glitter raccoon? Are you, I'm a glitter raccoon. Yeah. I'm a purple raccoon.
Raccoon is the new sparkle dog.
Yeah, I know. I heard that. I was upset. Because I was like, oh, I felt personal. My raccoon name is Quincy.
That's a good name.
Yeah, it's John Quincy Adams is my favorite president. So, and it just
you'll be happy to know he's a relative.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
We might have actually talked about this at TFF. I think
very passively.
Because I told you, I believe we did. Because then I told you that means that you're also related to every other president except for Martin Van Buren. Yeah.
I think he was named after Quincy M.D., the old 70s show.
I mean, retroactively, yes.
He is now.
But yeah, I think the weird thing about like being a furry is, from my perspective as an outsider coming in and right now kind of shooting from the hip, trying to figure out all of these things, because I'm naturally a puzzle solver, because again, raccoon. But
and you don't just like randomly grab food and wash it in the nearest, you know.
I do
body.
Do that, but that's more of a hobby. I know, everybody always, it's so funny. Every single furry that I tell I'm a raccoon tells me about that video.
I'm just going, next weirdest, time I see you, I'm just going.
It's
walk
the
out.
Weirdest thing. It's such a weird. It's almost Truman Show
when,
level.
When you
every
come,
single furry tells me about that video, and it's hilarious.
So the next time you come to TFF and you open up your room and all you have is a couple bottles of water and a bag of cotton candy, you'll know I've set up your welcome committee.
That would be fantastic. But so from my perspective and trying to figure all this out, what it seems like is, it's like, and this is going to sound kind of weird, but I'll explain it. Being a furry is kind of like being a wizard in the Harry Potter universe, in that you need the life experiences and like background kind of in the back of your head, and then you need someone to just take you to a place where all of those other people are as well, and then you look around and you go, oh, this is where I fit in. Because it's like, I really do think, and people told me about this at TFF too, because I was trying to talk to them about like, hey, how do I explain this to my boyfriend to see if he'd want to do it? And they were like, yeah, just kind of explain it, and then you kind of just have to like take him to a con. And I think it's a mix of the community, and it's a mix of seeing at once, suddenly and immediately, all of the different elements, the suits, the art, the different properties that get folded in, the erotica, the writing,
and so all much of it original. At once.
Yeah.
And so much original. You don't get to appreciate the original until all the other elements have brought you in. And there's so much, original created content where, you're not supposed to be Simba, but you can be a lion from the area.
Right.
And that partially comes back from the day when a lot of cons and such were scared of Disney and absolutely banned any licensed material, art, or if it wasn't an official product, no, keep it out of our area because there was so much C&D and that shit early in the day. Mm-hmm. So that forced people to be creative.
Yeah.
And it maintains, if not, it's even taken off further these days. But you need those outside elements to pull you in before that hook gets you.
Right. And so that's what I'm saying is it's such a needle in a haystack, threading the needle. Mm-hmm. So many needle references that one could make that come together, and it's very complicated. I'm still trying to figure it out, kind of.
So are we.
Yeah.
And it keeps changing on us, too. I've been in it since 97.
Mm-hmm.
So I've just hit 21 years being part of the fandom, and these guys have been in it about as long.
Yeah.
And we've watched.
My persona's not old enough to drink yet.
And we've watched it evolve just in the time that we've been. I mean, I started when I was 19.
Yeah.
That's a long time ago now.
Mm-hmm.
And I've watched it from being mostly art-centric, a little bit of writing. And occasionally, you had some really sketchy-looking fursuits. And now the fursuits got better, the art got digital, the writing got more prolific. And, you got new properties to draw people in, so they brought in their own flavor. It's just constantly evolving.
Yeah.
Every new property brings in new people.
Mm-hmm.
And then we got stuff like dance competition.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there was an open mic at TFF, and that was great. Mm-hmm. I've told people that as somebody who used to run an open mic once a week for 3-4 years, five mm-hmm. years. I don't know. It's too long. I think 5 years. And I went to open mics, obviously, like almost every night of the week for 6 years. That was like the first time I've enjoyed an open mic in a very long time.
Oh, my. Like, I'm glad that you like that.
Yeah, I think it was a mix of not cynical people, like people that are like, oh, I want to try a stand-up. And they're not people that are like, I know what stand-up is, and I'm really going to blow these people's minds. But and also just I think that obviously, not everyone is this way, but it's a very open and supportive and fun community. I mean, like, I made friends there. I had a part of the reason I keep talking to TFF people about wanting to come back so much because I just had a really fun time. HavenCon was very similar. Mm-hmm. I wanted to come back as Master of Ceremonies, and I am working so hard to keep HavenCon going and to help HavenCon keep going. I was just talking about this with Karen Weeks while we were hosting the karaoke. When people were singing, we were trying to figure out things we can do because I want to keep HavenCon going. I like having these touchstones that kind of reinvigorate the spark of my humanity because it can get windy and wet and cold out there mm-hmm. in the world, and that's also the nice thing in general about cons. When you find your tribe and those people is refreshing and rebuilding yourself back up, because things can knock us down and tear us apart, and when you get back together with your group is when you really get to kind of restructure who you are as a person
mm-hmm.
and refill your tanks. And it's nice and it's beautiful and I love it.
I will say, though, after a con, sometimes my tanks are too full and I need to de-people a while.
Oh, sure. Definitely. Yeah. I mean, I was running 5 minutes to 10 minutes late here because I went to the VIP thing, then I had to go down to my table, then I had to take care of something, and I was doing costume changes the whole time, basically. Then I had to host the cosplay competition that I had been given no information for beforehand.
Oh.
Then, and had to vamp for 10 minutes, and then with nothing to do, then I danced, because everybody yelled dance at me, and then, and then I hosted karaoke, and then I was like, I am covered in sweat. And I have not eaten at all today.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was running late because I just had to take a shower. I ordered room service, took a shower, got the room service, and then I just wanted to sit in a quiet room for a minute and just breathe.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then I was like, if I go down now, I'm just going to be a frazzled mess. So as, but it's like, yeah, so I feel you. It's like, it can be too much, but there's beauty in the explosion of yourself, I guess.
But it's nice after one of these to go home to your quiet house and just go,
yeah,
and just go, it's quiet. There's no people.
Yeah, it's like,
it's how introverts deal with
exactly. Yeah, I mean, it's like going home from a con is like moving into a new house. You know, you come in and you enjoy the blankness of it,
mm-hmm.
and the emptiness of it, and then your boxes come, and then you enjoy putting up all of your memories, mm-hmm. and so it's nice, and they're not necessarily removed from each other. They build on each other. So it's you have all the fun, and it's a whirlwind. Then you go home. Pause, reset, and then reflect and remember and move forward.
All pause. Right.
Yeah, pause. How long have we been going?
Pause.
We're really bad with the pause.
All right, so we should probably wrap.
I'm so sorry that I made
no,
this.
No, we're up. Sorry because you've got, like, busy.
Oh, that's fine. I don't think they need... me for the. I don't think I was supposed
you
to introduce
check your
the,
phone. It's on yeah, silent. And it's just no, blowing up.
I don't think I was supposed to introduce the dance or anything.
Okay,
because they're just doing yeah. the dance party. I know I have to be down there for a little bit because it's master of ceremonies. I feel like I am obligated to. I want to, but I also feel more obligated to kind of like be at every event.
At
kind
least
of
every large one.
Yeah, just kind of be a visible presence there. Like,
I
hey,
have
I'm
to
around.
Say, with that
out.
Hair, you are very visible.
I know the hair has really helped out. Yeah, especially being like 6'3" with pink, like bright pink hair, it makes people.
It is a particular vivid shade of magenta. I
yeah,
have to say,
I am a magentleman.
Nice.
Okay. That you win that one.
Thank you.
But we should probably wrap up. So I want to thank you very much for coming on, giving your thoughts, both on the, you know, fairly new to the fandom. I just wanted to get an outsider's view because we've had Shane come on, who mm-hmm. we introduced to it, and you kind of, it seemed like TFF was a good time. So I want to try yeah. and get your feeling on
it was great.
Fandom from an outsider's view.
Yeah.
It was, go ahead and shout out all your Patreon and podcast links and stuff.
Oh, yeah. I am at Cody Melcher, ESQ, on all social media but one. You can find me at CodyMelcher.com. I have an album called In Falsitas Veritas coming out on April 19th.
You probably want to spell that.
Yeah, it's Latin. I-N space. FALSITAS space VERITAS. It means in falsehood truth. It's a mm-hmm. takeoff of In Vino Veritas. Literally, I performed it at the Indianapolis Fringe Festival, and I literally had an audience member come because the title was in Latin. So I know my market. But yeah, it's a collection of comedic essays about the concept of truth
mm-hmm.
In media. It's actually from a collection of essays that I performed at the Paper Machete, which is a live magazine in Chicago that's mm-hmm. held at Al Capone's old bar. And some other place, another show called The Skewer, which are live lit shows in Chicago. And so basically it's from a couple of years of that. And I started doing it in 2016 before fake news really took off. But it is essentially about fake news and the concept of truth and the concept of...
I think it was very relevant.
Yeah, it's right the now. Concept of, like, gray areas and being comfortable with being uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
And so it includes everything from famous news stories to a story about Truman Capote's ashes. So check it out.
Now
you can find
head
it
tilt?
Online. Yeah, April 19th. And then and my Patreon is patreon.com/CodyMelcherESQ. And yeah, my podcast is Tomefoolery, as I mentioned. And I have another podcast that I'm relaunching currently called So I've Done Some Googling. Which is basically the way I describe it is like a Dear Prudence meets Let Me Google That For You. So you just people write in questions that they've always had, but they don't have time to like actually research it, and then I just look it up for them, and then I do a podcast.
I listen to the Centaur episode.
Yeah. So the earlier ones were more just actually me Googling, and so those are going to be called like prequels now or something.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I'm reformatting it a little bit because the concept of me just sitting there and actually Googling was like, oh, it's a good gem of an idea, and then I need to actually like make it a little bit of a stronger premise. Yeah. And so now it's more questions based.
Cool.
That's neat.
So yeah. So, but yeah, the Centaur one is a good one. That one was the first episode because in the Tomefoolery fan group, which is on called the Tomefoolery Parlor, it's on Facebook. They share a lot of centaur stuff because I am infamous on my podcast for hating centaurs.
Oh dear!
And
I am now sad.
I'm sorry. Yeah, I had a no centaur shirt last year here at HavenCon, and I didn't. I did not bring it back this year because I was informed that too many people liked centaurs.
And my character is not a centaur, but is one of the cat.
Have you heard of Chat Cats yet?
Oh, so. I will let you know that my ire against centaurs is very specific to centaurs. So
okay.
any other form, I have some concerns,
I now need to
confusion
listen.
And complications with different forms of centaur-esque animals or beings.
I just assume it's magic behind the curtain, and I don't question too deeply because my anatomy sense starts bothering me.
Yeah, mine's more historically about centaurs and also just concepts. We can talk.
I'll just listen to your episode and then I'll understand.
It's come up actually kind of frequently, but it's in the it's specifically in the episode "The Wendigo." With Dave Stanton, which is a story written by Algernon Blackwood about a Wendigo.
Okay.
As the title suggests. But that specific rant is on that episode.
Yeah. All right. I'll find it and I'll learn.
The reverse centaurs where it's the legs of a man and the upper body of a horse. I mean, it's like, why do I exist?
The only centaurs I do like are baby centaurs where it's like a galloping horse child. Because foals, yeah. Foals can run pretty early on in their lives and the baby is like flailing. Yeah, those are the only ones I like, and that's because at least we've established the futility of the thing. So there we are. But yeah, that's me. Come say hi if you see me on the street, I guess. You can also check out a podcast called Shuffle Quest that I am a cast member of, which is a live real play podcast where we play a team of D&D characters who are transported to actual fan and real property created tabletop formats of properties. So like our first arc was Men in Black World, which was an actual Men in Black role-playing game, and then we did the Sonic Sex World actually is one, and then we did we have some other ones coming up, and we also did I can't remember the second one at all. Dragon Ball Z, and it's really fun. We get transported by the head of Olmec from Legends of Hidden Temple, and so but it's a really fun silly podcast
that's Olmec? Really?
Yep.
Oh, Olmec, my God.
The head. Yeah, and so it's really cool. And it's like, and we play actual, and I also DM'd the Christmas episode where it was a Tales from the Crypt. So I played the Crypt Keeper who transported them into a Christmas hellscape.
Oh, my God.
But it's a real fun podcast. I really enjoy doing it.
That sounds like a lot of fun.
Thank you. Yes.
All right, so check out Cody's podcast and his websites and all of his other fun things and
all my writing and everything. You can find it all through CodyMulcher.com. All roads lead through there.
Yeah. So you can Google and you can find all sorts of fun stuff. So I want to thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
All right. And so I think we'll probably wrap it up at that point. So on that note,
on that note,
good night and big books.